Rub-a-dub-dub, three Android app addicts in a tub tonight. Door Rants, Mark Rants, and Eric Shills for Monster Energy Drink. That and more on Android App Addicts. Hey everybody, welcome back to Android App Addicts, episode 496. This is the show where we talk about Android apps, Android hardware, and whatever else happens to cross our minds. My name is Mark, sometimes known as the Sultan of the Soapbox Cockerel, and I'm flanked this week by two, yes, two co-hosts. We're breaking some sort of federal law, I think, right now. Eric, the executive, the great one, the man himself, Ardini, and Steve, the door-to-door geek, McLaughlin. Hello, gentlemen.
Hey, Mark. I heard the last show, and yeah, I was wondering if you weren't going to be back just to keep it going. I'm glad you're back, though. I can leave. I didn't really like that. Two weeks in a row, and this is much better. We're bringing band back together, man.
Glad to be back.
The government shutdown is over for 2 weeks, so you know we can all be here.
Yeah. We don't have to go scrambling and make sure our fallout shelters are clean or anything like that this week.
I've got a friend who works for the Dallas court system in Texas, and her government shutdown lasted like 6.5 hours. That was, you know, that was her full experience.
Yeah. I only know one guy, Rob Flacco Hare, where he's in, the windy state right there next to Texas.
Oklahoma.
He works as an air traffic controller air traffic controller realm. And he just posted like one thing on Twitter saying, I'm loving the government shutdown. He was like drinking beer, playing old NES games. And he didn't get a chance to do that for too long.
Yeah, Oklahoma's only windy because Louisiana sucks, by the way.
Okay. I will say now, February 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th, Eric, Ardini, and I are going to be in Orlando, Florida. Mark might be in Orlando, Florida. So there's more than likely going to be no Android App Addicts episode that week, which unfortunately I do think would actually run in exactly to show number 500.
I will be taking my Sony recorder with us, though, just in case there's a chance to do some kind of impromptu thing. I'll have that packed along with us. So I don't know. I think I've taken it other places. I've never used it then, but I'm still going to bring it.
I'm going to make a friendly wager with you of a beer, sir, or some beverage that pretty much everybody there we see is going to have iPhones. Something tells me. I'm just guessing. So I don't know how much Android stuff we're going to have to talk about, except for our own personal Android experience.
Yeah, I don't. What's the percentage? Anybody know the percentage of iPhones in the world versus, or in the country versus iPhones?
It's about 50-50.
Is it?
Okay. Yeah, it's like all Androids combined are about 48%, and all Apples combined are about 48%, and the rest are the rest.
That makes me sad for the other half. Mm-hmm. How does half the people all like the same thing?
Eric, were you not paying attention during the last presidential election? Because kind of the same thing happened. Just saying.
I didn't buy an Android just because I totally hated the BlackBerry that much and do it in spite. I didn't buy a Tizen phone because, oh, never mind. I'm not even going to try to figure that out.
Unfortunately, I have a work thing that got shifted to that week. So I was hoping I could take some days off, but I might be able to zip out right after work on Friday and hang out with you guys on Saturday. That would be something I'd like to do.
Cool.
That would be awesome. I'll tell you that. The only other person I know who's going to be there is Steve Cherubino. So if you remember ye old Podnuts owner host, and you are in the Orlando area and you would like to just walk up to him and call him and just say, sup, Cherbs, he will be in that town.
And if you forgot what he looked like, you can also go, bring him back Apple again, but you can go on iTunes and watch the movie that he is actually in, and that's called The
Message.
The Messengers. Yeah, it's a movie about podcasting on iTunes. that he's in that. So that's pretty cool too. And I just watched it. I've owned it. I pre-ordered it, and I just didn't have a device to watch it on forever. And I just finally got to watch it like last week.
He totally loves it when people call him Cherbs. So
he does do that. And I'll say to anybody who watched that, I'm going to do everything in my power to try to find the ladies from the PMS podcast and just give them high fives.
Yeah.
And that just put the podcast screeching halt.
Well, you know, there's, I don't know if it was PMS though. I think it was the whole cycle, not just the P part of it.
That's a great name for a PMS podcast, the whole cycle. That's awesome. Yeah.
But I can't remember what it was.
They've got a clever name of it. They do.
It was really clever. I will say that.
It's not like Ant Flow Show or nothing like that, but it's still pretty clever. We could probably come up with a better one.
Oh, yeah.
We just came up with two, actually.
I know. So let's just stop there. We've won. Okay. Now let's just move on.
Collector.
I will say this is maybe the quietest week in anything sufficient, I'll say, Android-related news-wise that I've heard. Because I do believe Mobile World Congress is coming up in maybe a week or two.
Yeah.
So it's been like ridiculously, ridiculously quiet. You know, Android is Android. People out there are still posting all kinds of crazy articles about Android malware. Yet I feel like that John Travolta meme GIF where I'm looking around, where's all this malware? I don't see anybody having any effect of it. And everyone we communicate with, nobody seems to have any actual encounters with these malwares. But these articles make it sound like they're everywhere.
I have a little bit of hardware news.
Before you go on, but Mobile World Congress, I just Googled it, starts tomorrow, February 26th, and ends next week, Thursday, March 1st. So,
thanks, sir.
Does it say who's headlining that?
Samsung Galaxy S7 will be announced right now, putting money on it, and they are going to officially kill Bixby because they should.
You know, my deputy clerk uses Bixby a lot. She likes it.
Eric, there are people in this world that marry goats and love them. Does that mean we all should?
I'm not saying no.
Just because somebody out there loved it doesn't give it any more credibility than the next. Britney Spears won Grammys. Okay. Does that mean she's a better musician than the other people? I'm going to say no.
So, Eric, tell us about your hardware. What?
Tell us about your hardware, Eric. I just didn't want to go down the Britney Spears
road. No, I'm still going there now. I don't even remember what I was going to say.
You have new hardware news.
Oh, no, I don't really. I was just saying that. I was at a conference in Schaumburg, and that's across the street from the biggest mall in Illinois. So my first day, I had some time to kill in the morning after I went to the bank and got turned into a treasurer of another organization. I went to this mall, and I tried out the Microsoft. Well, they got a Microsoft store, and they had an Apple store, and I visited both of them, you know, because there wasn't a Google store, unfortunately. But the Apple store was packed, crowded. People just sitting around waiting for their turn. It reminded me of going to like a U.S. Cellular store, and where you walk in and somebody with an iPad says, "Oh, what's your name?" And they're like, "Okay, sit there for 2 hours or however long it takes us to get to you." And they're just doing that, sheeple, man, I tell you. So then I went over to the Microsoft store, and I couldn't not. I mean, there was just no customers, tons of employees, and I was like the guy at that hour that came into that store. So I checked out some of their new laptops and the Microsoft Surface, the big desktop, you know, it's like a 21 inch screen that folds down into like a flat desk thing. Nice. It'd be nice for like doing some Fusion 360 designing on it or something like that. It'd be really good for that. Very expensive. Dell had one just like it, but had big speakers sticking out the front of it. I guess that's for music producers or something. But then I got to try the mixed reality because there was absolutely no line for that. They're like, "Oh, you want this thing just sitting over here? Hey, introducing Windows Mixed Reality. Come try on a headset and hold these lighted up joysticks in your hand." So I'm like, "Yeah, I'm down." So I checked it out, and it wasn't bad. I mean, I've done the VR thing with my Android phone and Google Cardboard and stuff like that. I watched a 3D movie, you know, like where you're just like a part of a film crew, and that was actually crappier than most of the ones I saw on Android. It was swimming with dolphins, and the resolution was horrible. It did not look good. But the game they had there was you're just kind of standing on a planet, and there's little drones that fly up, and they're shooting at you. And when they shoot at you, you got to like move and bend your head over to the side to dodge their bullets. The bullets come at you in like slow motion, so you do have a chance to do that. But you got the mixed reality joysticks, and you're putting them up in the air and shooting them down. It was a pretty fun game.
thousands of dollars worth of technology and years of research to play dodgeball?
Similar, yeah. I mean, you could probably get it done with about a $600 computer and a $200 headset.
Nope.
Well, the one I had on was not a real expensive. Well, and the computer was maybe $800, but the headset was only like $200.
The video card was pushing $800, which I'm very happy to say the death of VR is imminent now because cryptocurrencies. I did not see this one coming. Cryptocurrencies have crippled the video card market. Prices for video cards have, I don't want to say gingerly, skyrocketed because everyone's buying them for cryptocurrency. So now if you want a game, you got to pay between 25 and 40% more for the same video card versus 6 months ago, which just jacks up the price of virtual reality PCs. Still, if you want to get good 720p virtual reality, you're spending easily $800 on the computer, closer to $1,200 complete on the unit. And for that much money, why? I just don't. I'm telling everyone now, I've said this now off and on for over a year. You're going to go into a guy's house, you're going to look over. Before, you would look over and you would see a steering wheel and a pedal, and you would think, oh, that's that guy who still has that stuff around to play those video games using those controls, because nobody else does it. You're going to go into a house, you're going to see somebody with stupid things set up in the corner of their room and a little VR headset sitting on the table, and you're going to say, oh, there's the guy who bought into this, and he's still having fun playing it. And it's not a bad experience. It's just not going to catch on. We are still too early. I'm going to say 3, maybe 5 years out. Again, they're going to try this all over again. And by then, they're going to try 3D TVs again and curved TVs again and virtual. This is such a gimmick. This is just doing nothing than driving markets, trying. Everybody's fighting to make money, and everyone thinks this is it to make money. And so far, nobody has made money.
I can open up that tub right over there on the other side of the screen and get that force feedback steering wheel pedal combo set.
Yeah.
And there's nothing, that's a great feeling. And like the force feedback joystick you used to have for airplane flying flight simulator games and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Great feeling. It's just,
they're cool.
I don't have time to break all that stuff out to play a racing game.
Well, and that's the thing. That's the one reason why I don't see them taking off is, while yes, I do believe we have more leisure time now than we ever did as adults, but at the same token, ain't nobody got time for that. If you can afford a $1,000 plus computer for gaming, you're probably too busy working.
Yeah, right.
You know, if you want to combine, say, the Nintendo Wii bobblehead guys with the stunning graphics of Second Life circa 2007 and your media library, you could strap on a set of Google Daydream goggles and watch the new Plex VR while we're talking virtual reality. That was a new thing that dropped this week.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I get that either. Even though host of the Mini PC Show, Brian, has and does watch complete movies, normal movies, not VR movies, normal movies in VR headsets. And I'm thinking to myself, don't you like your family? What the hell? I don't understand how that's an enjoyable experience. I mean, I like Fast Times at Ridgemont High as much as the next guy, but I have zero desirability to watch that in VR.
Now if I was on an airplane, maybe, yeah, or, you know, something like that, that would be a pretty cool experience. You know, you put your headphones on, you put your goggles on, and you're watching, you know, a 90-foot screen. I get it, but...
The Samsung headset has... the speakers built into it, or headphones built into them too. So right. I don't know, one less cord, I guess.
I'm pretty sure it's safe to say by this time next year, foldable phones will be making more money than VR.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I did want to see, you know, I've heard about like the virtual desktop, you know, the Windows, a whole operating system in the VR world, and that was not to be found. I even asked, no such thing.
I expect that at some point the promise of Google Glass will be made, and I'll put on a pair of glasses much like these I'm wearing right now, and that will be my desktop environment, and I'll be able to interact with it, you know, by moving things around. That seems logical to me. That seems to me like the thing that'll take off, but we are so far away from that. We are not a computer generation, but a human generation away from that.
Yeah, so for now, look forward to the fingerprint behind the screen. That's going to be cool. Look forward to some kind of foldable phone. Maybe by the third generation of them, they'll actually make sense and they'll actually work how we expect them to, and they'll be good. But literally for the next year on the mobile market, the only thing I see is 6+ gig phone in RAM being the normal. Hopefully we get 4,000 milliamp batteries as the normal. I could care less about refresh rate. I could care less about screen resolution. Last thing I need is a 4K phone for dear sake. But I do think, I hate to say it, by the end of this year, I do believe to find a headphone jack on a phone is going to be a very difficult proposition.
You know, that doesn't bother me. I use Bluetooth. If I'm using a headphone, it's a Bluetooth headphone. It doesn't bother me all that much. Yeah. I understand wailing and gnashing of teeth and we fear change, but let it go. I miss the floppy drive either.
I thought I might miss it. I've been 3 months now with this Pixel 2, and I've never been like, man, if only I had a headphone jack right now. I've never found myself in that situation. Now, I don't have a square card reader. Do they have a Bluetooth version? That came up today when I was talking to somebody, and I remember that I had to use that went through my headphone jack. So I imagine they have, it's been years since I used a square. So I imagine they probably have a Bluetooth version for that now. Or
I thought USB-C. They did. Yeah, they have like Bluetooth thing you can basically like put next to your phone, and you can get it free 2-day shipping with Prime. $47. Well, okay, $47 from at least Amazon, with the official seller being Square itself. So yeah, and of course these are chip readers,
right? Contactless, tap to pay things.
Yeah, because it's the future. Oh, sorry.
But think about it. What do you really need from a phone that you don't have now? You need more of the same, right? It's like in the desktop world, Intel pretty much got to the point where the best they could do was cram more cores on a chip. And that's been the case for a decade now. There's been no innovation. It's just cramming more cores on a chip. And I just think that's where we are with the phones right now. We're going to have this exact same device, you know, in 8 years. We'll have a better battery and a faster processor, but it will look just like this.
They could make some kind of technology that reads forward and monitors what your usage is and try to guess what you're going to do next.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a thing maybe that we might see. I would say Pico projectors. I wouldn't mind having one of them every now and then. Better speakers, better battery life. That's about it, yeah. But there's so many things. You know what? 4 years ago, there's probably things on my phone that I use daily now that I didn't even think of then. I mean, there's always some guy's going to come out with, or girl's going to come out with some great killer app, you know, and we're going to love it. And we're gonna be like, man, I can't believe my phone never had that before.
Thank you for bowing to political correctness and making sure that we're equally represented by saying, or girl. Thank you. Did you see that
all the chicks in the chat room, man? I'm saying.
There we go. Went downhill really quick. I will say, I do think Eric is on to something. I do think the only interesting thing that's going to happen in the next year-ish of phones, it's not going to be hardware. It's going to be a combination of hardware and software, like the folding screen. There means screens are going to be of a different format size. They're not going to be 16:9 or 4:3. So we're going to need software to maximize the difference you get with that kind of thing. And that's what it's going to take. I mean, because now almost every phone has almost the exact same features. The only thing that really differentiates is quality of camera. Is it a 9.8 or is it a 9.9? Because almost every phone seems to be at least a 9.5. And stuff like NFC, which it seems like 90% of the people really don't care about, and then 10% of the people are obsessively passionate about it. I don't know what it's going to be that's going to actually drive people. Hopefully, it's better experiences on the device. I don't know.
And I have been using NFC a lot now. I got my PayPal account hooked to my Google Pay account. Oh, yeah. So Doris holding up an NFC button array.
Yeah.
It's like four buttons that you can just stick to the back of your phone, and then you can program each button to do whatever you want. But I've been using Android Pay a lot, and I brought this up a couple weeks ago, and just using that for all of my loyalty cards and payments and everything. And, you know, somebody's paying the juice on my convenience. You know, I'm not paying a surcharge or anything, but somebody is. But I dig the convenience of it.
Yeah, Android or NFC specifically because of Android Pay has become a must-have feature. I won't buy a phone that's not NFC again. Having experienced that, you know, there's only a handful of retailers where that works, but it's spreading. it's getting to more and more places. And you just, especially with the latest version of Android Pay, which came out maybe 3 or 4 months ago, it is literally tap and go. You don't have to do anything else. You used to do some sort of extra interaction on your phone, some sort of this one, your whole phone has to be unlocked, right? So that's really all there is to it. In my case, it's a fingerprint unlock, tap, done.
Now, I was at the gas station today, and I was the first person who's ever, like, I was at a Shell, and they've got fuel rewards. And I don't have a fuel rewards card. So I'm like, I'm on my Android Pay, I'm at the pump, I'm trying to type in this, like, 25-digit long number in there. And I get through it, and they're like, shh, dreaming, that wasn't even close, or we ran out of digits for you to type in. We were really looking for a backup phone number if you had that. So why don't you just pump and then go inside? So I pumped my, wow, that sounded bad. I pumped the gas, went inside to pay with cash, you know, like back in the day, and I took out my phone, and I'm like, they're so used to the fuel rewards being a credit card where somebody swipes it. I handed her my phone. I'm like, can you scan the barcode on here? She's like, she took my phone, scanned. And then her and two other Shell employees were like, wow, that was really cool. I've never seen anybody try to do that. And then I paid with cash, you know, but then as I'm walking out, they're like, oh, remember that one guy who always comes in here and just taps his phone? I want to get a phone like that. So it's coming around. People are starting to get used to it and see it.
The newest ATM at my local bank branch has a contactless reader on the ATM. I just swipe my phone over it and enter $20 and money comes out.
Nice.
Oh, that's the downside. But Eric, this is not an accusation of any magnitude. I just want to let you know, moving forward, if you do encounter police of any level and they see you have any cash on your person, even in some jurisdictions, more than $40, they are basically taught anybody with cash on them exceeding X amount, and sometimes it's very low, it's literally like $40 or $60, must be doing one of the following activities: buying drugs, going to strip clubs, or doing some other kind of black market activity. So it's just a little bit of a warning to make sure when you have money in your pocket, you have explicit plans ready to tell people of uniforms and badges.
Going to meet somebody for a Craigslist deal.
I don't remember what the qualifier before that sentence was, but hey, Dor, do you like chicken pot pie?
All three, yes. Oh, wait, no. Yeah, it's not an accusation, Eric. I'm just saying, because my dad is a cop, so I know these kinds of things. In Baltimore City, if you have more than $60 on your person and you don't say you have it explicitly to go there and buy something, they are taught to assume you're in the middle of going to do some sort of illegal activity. Keep your eye on them, or, you know, check them really good.
Yeah, this is just, I like my phone cash. So if I get rolled, they're not going to steal my phone because I'm actually going to have cash. Here, take this, boys. Leave me alone. I'm still listening to a podcast here.
How much do you think the average phone gets on the black market?
I don't think much, because they're locked, they're trackable, there's nothing.
Well, first off, yes, you can have the phone locked. It doesn't mean anything. FBI are part of the people who brought this technology to light, where they can just basically plug any phone up to this. As long as the phone is powered on, cycled on, and you get through the initial first-time password entry of a phone, they can suck all the information off of it. And the average dollar amount is around $125 to $225. And especially for a phone like yours, you got a popular phone. They can break that down into parts, go on eBay, sell it for easy $100.
Yeah, but the thug who's mugging you is going to take it to somebody and get $50 for it. That guy will turn it into $200. But the guy who's holding you up is going to get $50 out of it.
So if I got $30 cash, that's probably a compelling argument for his. He's going to actually have a moral dilemma for the first time in his life, and he's going to try to figure out which way to go.
Right. And I can tell you, because I've had, like, I don't want to say nightmares or dreams or anything, but I've had instances go through my head where I purposely think, if this happens, I have to, as quick as I possibly can, reboot my phone. Because if the police official takes my phone and it's during the first reboot process, I haven't entered my password yet, the fingerprint reader will not work on my phone. If you take my good finger on first boot, touch it to the fingerprint scanner, it still insists to put a password in, and I'm guessing a lot of Android phones.
See, you need to set those Android NFC buttons. If you hit the top one and the third one down at the same time and hold them for 5 seconds, it automatically does that. That batch runs, and your phone's locked and reset just like that.
See, we came up with this app on the Geek Rant a couple of years ago that we solved this problem, where you have two security patterns on your phone. The one, the pattern or password that unlocks it, and the other one that immediately switches everything in your phone to My Little Pony icons and themes.
Like a second user on the phone?
So when the police say, you know, can I have your phone? Sure, you unlock it. Instead of 1, 2, 3, 4, you do 4, 3, 2, 1, and it's all My Little Ponies. And, you know, and you're good.
And then the cop high fives, hey, Brony, how you doing, bro? Hey, go to the convention.
Well, the two quickies. One, then you have a problem of scale, Mark. Once you get too popular, then every cop knows what's going on. But two, I'm happy to hear Geek Rant is back. And I got to say a really quick comment. You starting this show with very passionately stating how these kinds of things are going to change in the show. As a podcaster, let me tell you something. I love when a podcaster does that for one reason alone. It shows genuine passion and caring about the product, that you are not settling with, this is the way we've done it, this is the way we're going to do it, we're not going to do anything else. Just accepting the fact that we're going to try to make some changes in the show shows me you are just trying to make it better, which is the kind of thing that I love seeing. So thank you very much.
So you're changing the name back?
No. No, it's now called We Don't Give a Crap. That's the new title. So,
who are you talking to?
Since this show is called Android App Addicts, maybe we should do some Android apping. And Eric, since you were gone, I'm going to let you start us off.
Aw, thanks, Mark. I'm going to start us off with an app that I used this weekend, or last weekend. I was at the grocery store before I left on my trip, and an actual retired officer of the law came up to me and started chatting, and he said, have you seen this wine? I'm like, I don't really drink wine. And I thought he was showing it to me because it was called 19 Crimes Wine. And each wine bottle has a different person who's been incarcerated. And the link is in the chat, I think, unless I fell out of the chat room. Let me reset that. Reload. So the name of the app is called Living Wine Labels. And it's an augmented reality app. And if you buy one of these bottles of wine and you hold your phone up in front of it, one of these 19 criminals who were incarcerated in England and sent to jail somewhere in Australia will tell a story of his incarceration. Just a really short story of it. But basically, the guy on the wine bottle comes to life, his head's moving around, and he starts talking about his crime that he did. And I thought that was kind of neat. The bottle of wine I had to buy was like $10, so it's pretty spendy for. I think that's a lot for a bottle of wine, but I don't usually drink, you know, more than like $3 wine. It also
we'll get back to the app in a minute, but I want to talk about wine for just a moment. I'm not a wine guy. I don't drink alcohol. I don't enjoy the flavor of alcohol. I was going to a friend's house over Christmas, and I was going to bring a gift of wine because I know that he's a wino. I mean, he enjoys wine. And I was like, I don't know what to bring. You know, should I just stop in at like Walgreens and get the stuff in the box, or what? What is the appropriate gift of wine? And then I realized it's like giving a NASCAR fan the wrong driver on a figurine, or giving, you know, an Eagles fan a Redskins helmet decal. You know, and so I realized that I just couldn't buy any wine at all because it would be the worst thing to do. This, however, is an excuse. It doesn't matter what's in the bottle. It's what's on the bottle that matters. So I may buy several of these just for my gift-giving opportunities.
So I was with a bunch of wine drinkers. The city clerks are notorious for drinking wines. And they all were cheesing about this thing. They thought it was pretty cool. So I think I scored a hit. And you know, we have like a prize table, and everybody brings something to give away. It's a thing. But yeah, it's pretty neat. And it works with Walking Dead wine and a couple others, too.
So here's what I don't get. What does the criminal have to do with the wine?
It gets you to buy the wine. That's what it does.
Yeah, it's 19 crimes wine, and there's these 19 guys that got sent to Australia.
I would have expected wine when I think wine, with my finger under my nose pushing it up, wine snob. I would have thought that you point it at the wine bottle, and then you hear a French guy talk about the delicate nature of the grapes and how we wait for the perfect time of the season, and we only use 14-year-old female feet to crush the grape ever so gently. I mean, I thought we would hear all kinds. No, you hear criminals. I mean, that's confusing.
But it says,
are you sure it ain't beer?
It says that coming soon, there is Behringer Brothers and it's gonna work with that. And they'll say a journey back to 1895 to help the brothers capture a moment in history. And then Chateau Saint-Jean, watch the chateau come to life as winemaker Margot Van Starveren narrates a magical day at the estate. So that may be closer to what you're thinking.
Yeah, and I'll say here's the good thing. If they do the AR right, they don't need buy-in from the manufacturer of the wine. Because all it is pattern recognition on the screen, and then you pop it in and you show something else. So it isn't super difficult, and you don't need them to cooperate whatsoever. So I really do like the idea of this, and I feel you, Mark. Every time the wife asks me to go buy a bottle of wine, she's like, oh, well, give me a barefoot. A barefoot? What?
Oh, yeah.
That's like saying,
give me a beer.
Give me a soda, Mark.
Yeah.
There, what the hell? You know, wasn't it? My wife does this with everything. Whether it's, can you pick up a thing of ice cream? What kind of ice cream? Well, you know, no, I don't know. You tell me the exact thing or I'm not buying it. Same thing like with the wine. If I'm going over a friend's house and they like wine, they better tell me the size of the bottle, the brand of the bottle, the make of the bottle, and what color the label is, just to be sure, because I'm not getting the wrong stuff. That is offensive. I've seen that in the past.
So the 19 Crimes Red Wine Blend, 750 milliounces, sold at my local Walmart for $8.12 a bottle.
That's the exact one I bought. Not the same store, though. Yeah, it was red wine.
So, I mean, and here's the thing with me. You heard how the venom, the spewed right out of my mouth, talking about VR, because I think it's caca, poo-poo, yucky. AR, I still think, is cool and has a long, glorious future with these devices, because it fits. And it's something you can very easily share with somebody else without getting a forehead full of sweat.
Yeah.
You know?
And so the one thing is, it left you wanting more. I mean, the story was just short enough that you're like, that didn't really tell me what you did a whole lot, but I might buy another bottle of wine and see what the next one does.
So just one more tangent, I promise. One more for this 5-minute segment. It frequently comes up in when I'm surrounded by other adults that somebody will offer me an alcoholic beverage or somehow talk about drinking alcohol, and I always tell them I don't like alcohol, and inevitably we go down this road about, well, is it a spiritual thing? Is it a religious thing? Were you brought up in a fundamentalist household? They always want to know why I don't like alcohol. If I'm in the same group of adults and I say I don't like carrots, oh, okay. Yeah, so I don't know.
But have you tried these carrots?
Right.
Because, yeah. You know, if we're in Orlando.
Here's a carrot like, you're really going to like. You need to try this carrot because you're going to like that carrot. And so I finally come up. I've only tried it a couple of times now at a couple of social gatherings over the weekend, but I think it works.
Yeah.
I now don't say I don't like alcohol. I say I don't like ethanol. So does it have ethanol in it? I don't like it.
Wow.
Is it wine? Is it beer? Is it vodka? Does it have ethanol in it? I don't like it.
That
so
really,
problem solved.
It really messes with me. Even I didn't even ask you the question. I'm like, what? Yeah, that'll stop them right in their tracks.
Yeah. See, Mark, I will say this. There was an old show on TV called Kids Say the Darndest Things. And really what it should have been called was Kids Sometimes Say the Most Intelligent Things. I'm just going to say this, Mark. Maybe you should take a little bit of guidance from my youngest son. My youngest son insists he hates peanuts of all kind. And when I say all kind, he thinks almonds, cashews, they're all peanuts, and I hate them all. He loves peanut butter, though. So what he just tells everybody whenever someone asks him, do you want this? Do you want peanuts on your sundae at the restaurant? No, I'm allergic to them. He just says that. They don't ask any other questions. Because the first couple times he said, I can't stand peanuts. Oh, well, these are good. These are honey roasted. So just tell people I'm allergic, and they will just shut up.
Yeah.
And then, like when he eats peanut butter in front of them, they go blitzkrieg, freako, thinking he's going to die.
He
thinks it's hilarious.
Stabbing EpiPens in his leg and stuff.
Yeah, he thinks it's hilarious. I'm like, dude, you got to stop doing that. But he figured out how to get people as quickly as possible to stop badgering him. He's the guy, I hate to say this, he's the guy who in 20 years is going to go into a restaurant and say, yeah, I'm gluten intolerant, and he's my kid. All I'm going to be able to do is just like put my palm in my face and just, you know.
Okay, I promised it would be the last tangent, but I lied. I had a friend growing up. Her parents were Jewish, but they weren't religious. They would just, their families had been Jewish. They'd been brought up in the Jewish culture.
So they were just,
but they
Jew-ish.
Themselves weren't religious. Yeah, they were just Jewish-ish. And so rather than go down the whole religious road, they told her from birth that she was allergic to pork so that she wouldn't eat pork. And so that was all that was. She was like 30 years old, and we were at a gathering, and she was eating a piece of pepperoni pizza. And I said, I thought you were allergic to that. Well, I'm allergic to pork. That's what's in that, you know. And so she went back and asked her parents, and they were like, yeah, we just didn't want the confrontation, so we told you you were allergic to pork.
I love those parents. Look, and this is what I tried to explain to my son the other day, because my oldest son came to me, I'll just say he told me something, and I tried to explain to him, look, nothing in this universe is absolutely black or absolutely white. Almost everything is some shade of gray, and where that shade of gray is depends on your own personal viewpoint. And you're my son, I support you. So you have to decide, is this completely wrong, or is it just kind of wrong, or are you okay with it? Because it ain't completely wrong, it ain't completely right. And his mind was just blown.
I always gave my kids, you know, your guys' kids are actually getting to that age. I told them, I go, if you're ever in a situation where, like, drugs are offered and you decide you're not going to do drugs, you can always blame me and just tell them, hey, my dad drug tests me, so I can't. And I told him, you can make me the bad guy, whatever you want to do. Just you can say that.
Yeah, we have my 15-year-old, we have a code. She can just text me the letter Q in a text message, just the letter Q, and that means call me and tell me it's time to come home. So if she gets in a difficult situation, she just sends a quick text, so Q for quick exit, and so then I call her, and then she can blame it on me. Ah, my dad's being a jerk. I got to go.
See, I was expecting it was going to say something like Vandalay Industries would be the message. Or something.
No, it's got
to
be short. It's got to be something she can do just subtly as if she's checking an email. See?
Gotcha.
Nice.
All right. So there we go. 30 minutes, one app. One more app, another 30 minutes of jargon, of play. Adore, what do you got for us?
This app, I'm very first off happy to say, is not completely unique, which I like. Competition is key with everything in computers. That's just the way life is. And I'm very happy to say on this podcasting network, mostly every host, I'm fairly confident in saying, knows what DuckDuckGo is. For those who don't, DuckDuckGo is an extremely hard-edged, privacy-focused service, web service. It's a search engine. What happens is you go to them, you perform a search, they then perform the search at places where you can actually pick Google, Bing, whatever, and get those search results back, but they don't pass your personal information to those other services. So it's anonymized at least to a degree. Nothing's perfect in this universe. If you expect perfection, just put a bullet in your head now, and then you'll be happy because it doesn't exist. These guys do the best they can possibly do to basically take all your personal information out, okay? That was their goal for the longest time, and they proved they could make money off of non-targeted search results, and they have been. They've been in business for years. Well, a couple months ago, I brought the Firefox Focus privacy browser to the show. This is basically the exact same kind of concept, except you're using DuckDuckGo completely. So you open up the app. You get nothing on your screen, just a search box. You type your search. It gives you your search results, or you type in your URL and it goes directly to that website. And then on the very top right-hand corner, you have two things of interest. You have what looks like a flame, where if you click that flame, it will give you the opportunity to clear all your data, all your cache, all your cookies, all your everything. So hypothetically, if you click a tiny URL on twitter.com, and it takes you to Amazon, where the guy is just so happens tries to hijack your Amazon affiliate code to use his. Well, if you open it up in this application, and then when you're done, you hit that flame, it will then get rid of that cookie, and you'll be back to using whatever Amazon affiliate thing that you want to use. But secondarily, it has a B in the top where if you click that, it will actually show you all the things on the page that is being blocked. Again, these are mobile devices. They're not built and designed with your privacy in mind. But these kinds of apps at least give you a window of opportunity of privacy when you want it. Or anonymity.
Oh, yeah, you nailed it, man.
Okay, that. It gives you that for at least a couple minutes, whether it's because you're clicking a tiny URL on someone's page, or whenever you open up the Reddit app, you want the links to come through here, or whatever. Everybody has a need for this. And if anybody tells you you shouldn't have anything to hide unless you're doing something illegal, give them the address, mail at podnuts.com, tell them to contact me. I'll give them my address and I'll ask them to come to my house so I can punch them in their face, because they're completely wrong when they say that.
You know, this app must have been around for a while, because I have not used it, but it says that I had it installed before.
Yes, no. Basically, the exact same URL existed, where it's duckduckgo.mobile.android, but it is a completely different code base. This is how the Android market works. When you first design an application, when you first go to submit your application, they give you a unique key that you stick inside of your app that then indicates this is this app. You can completely change the rest of the code base multiple times, but you can still identify it with the same SEO and the same targeting, the same URL. So that's the one way around it. So what they did was, before, it was just a search engine. You would open the app, type in your thing, it would search DuckDuckGo, and then when you click the link, it would open up your Chrome or your Firefox or whatever. Now it's the complete browser in one. So it's technically the same app, URL, the same registry in the Google Play Market, but now it's a new app with many more features, and it's installed on my phone.
I like that these guys are in Paoli, Pennsylvania. That's pretty cool. You don't see that too often.
I have to read a review here, because if I had to sit down and write a joke review, I don't think I could do better.
Oh, nice.
And I'm pretty sure this guy was serious. So Drew LeBeau says, excellent search engine. Edit. I had to remove 3 stars as the latest update removed a widget for the search engine bar. I restored a 5 stars when this is returned. Edit 2. I've brought the rating up to 4 stars because the widget was re-added. However, within the app, the feature that allows you to view a web page in your primary browser is still gone, so I've not returned it to 5. Edit 3. I've tested the functionality of the assistant and elected to remain with Google Assistant despite my preference for searching with DDG. If increased assistant functionality is added to this, would be good, though completely, and he completely overran the limit to the number of things. But so Drew is a thorough reviewer, if not a thorough writer of reviews. And he broke a promise. He said he'd give it 5 stars, and then he didn't.
Yeah. This is the internet, Mark. You can't trust people. And just really quick stats I forgot. The name of the app explicitly is DuckDuckGo, all one word, privacy browser by DuckDuckGo. It's under tools. 25,600 reviews, completely free to install, no ads, no in-app purchases ever. This is DuckDuckGo, with the average review of 4.4, 17,000 five-star reviews, updated January 25th, 2018, installs between 1 million and 5 million installs. And I will say this one more time, and then I'll probably hopefully never say it again. If you're listening to another show that's technology-focused in any shape, way, or form, and the host does not know what DuckDuckGo is, you really should email that show and let them know how anybody involved in technology should know how to do private searches on the internet, because incognito tab doesn't do it, bro. Okay. Period. They don't do it. If anyone knows anything, incognito mode merely means your search results will not be visible from the normal browser window. Google still knows who you are. They still will cater the search for you because you're using the same IP address, dummy. There's nothing private about incognito mode.
That is not entirely true. You get very different search results in an incognito mode than in a regular mode.
Log out of your browser, log out of Gmail, log out of Google, do a search, launch incognito mode, do a search. They will still give you the exact same
search. I'm telling you, logged in, I get one search result. Incognito mode, I get different results. Very different results.
It has nothing to do with incognito mode. It's just because you're not logged in.
That still makes it valuable. If you want to divorce yourself from the Google stuff to see what your search is, it's still valuable. Sure. I mean, let's face it, incognito mode is porn mode. Everybody knows that. But there is value outside of that. It's just not private. I mean, again, I'm not arguing with you that it's not private, but it's not fair to say that there's no difference.
And they know it's you because it's the same IP address.
Fine with me.
Okay, if you're...
So they're not going to be that different.
It's very different. Do it. It's very, very different.
No, you're still going to get the same political type bubble results.
If you're on DuckDuckGo, privacy browser, on your Google phone using Gboard, and your Google phone is registered to you, they know that you installed this.
You don't use Gboard. You do not use Gboard. When you open up Firefox Focus or DuckDuckGo, it uses its own keyboard.
But just because you're on, just the fact of being on a Google Android phone, you don't think that they know everything you do. They can't know everything that you do on that phone. I don't have any secure thought that they would not know everything I do on this phone.
The reason they use these browsers are just to keep things away from your normal browser caching cookies. That's my primary. Or if you think you might get unwanted wear, because I will say in the last year, there's been at least half a dozen people at my work who thought they've had malware on their phone. All I do is I say, give me your phone. I open up their browser. I open up their app info. I clear data, clear cache, give them their phone back. Everything's fixed.
Okay. So, I gotcha. So it's good for your use case as far as using somebody's affiliate link, but you're not going to hide from anybody if you're doing something nefarious on an Android phone with.
I just like to break in for a moment and say that, let you know that my drying cycle is complete. So, you know, IoT for the win.
That's good.
Nice.
So what kind of sensor did you use?
It's built into the washer dryer.
Oh.
Because we were talking to somebody else this week, so I said, everything has its purpose. I will say that. Everything has its purpose. The question is acknowledging what the limits of these tools are and using them for those purposes. I get upset when I hear people claim I'm using this for privacy's sake, and I try to explain to them anonymity and
anonymity. You did it right the first time, but then
I did it right one time. Privacy is a very broad sweeping word, which actually entails a whole bunch of different things. And to actually get actual privacy would require like installing a whole new ROM on your phone and then VPNing to like Poland.
Yeah.
And then bouncing from that VPN to China.
From the library's Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And never using a credit card
and making sure that you're actually remoted into another computer with different fonts installed and different browser plugins and different screen resolution. I mean, you know, to be actual private and to hold one of these devices or use a desktop machine or a laptop machine, you are on drugs. You know, it just really can't happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I just didn't want to give anybody a false sense of security, you know, thinking that they're.
Well, I'm just so upset on Android. In my experience, because I use my phone a lot, if all the people with the ridiculous URLs doing tagging and flagging and trying to hijack affiliate cookies for all kinds of websites, I always say Amazon because they're the most popular ones, but I've seen literally hundreds of different websites where I go to and they're basically, I see the URL and I see how they're hijacking this without telling me that, you know, this link contains also my affiliate code in it.
I always just assume that.
You have to these days, yeah.
All right, let me read an email. I generally recommend that people keep emails, you know, short and to the point. But Randy started saying that Mark is right. So when you start your email that way, it can be as long as you want it to be. So pro tip there. Randy says, hey guys, I'm a brand new listener and I thought I'd share some thoughts. I've gone through 2 episodes. So when he said brand new, he really meant it. And when I heard, I think, Mark talk about his Fire tablet, I knew I was in the right place. Any moron can spend thousands of dollars on tech gear, but I take it as an intellectual challenge to get the most from my money. I'm a retired electronic engineer, most of the time in semiconductors. I've worked on everything from Z80s to 68000s to x86 to ARM processors. I'm a big fan of Fire tablets based on their value. I use them to read ebooks, watch videos, a bit of email and Twitter. For my use, they're great. Actually, my first Fire was the Fire 6, which I still use for reading. But it's the size of a paperback book, and I can hold it and read it with one hand, using my thumb to turn the page. I have everything in between, including the huge Fire 10, but my Fire 8 died. I have a 128-gig micro SD card in the Fire 10 with pretty much everything backed up on it other than videos. The Fire tablets are great for downloading either Amazon or Netflix videos for viewing later, so it's a good idea to keep a larger USB card in them. The dirt-cheap Fire 7 works great for watching videos on trips off the network, and if you kill it or lose it, so what? I'd say that the Google Play Store works at about the 95% level, good enough for most things, but I always install apps from Amazon if I can. As an ebook reader on tablets, even though it's not an Android app, I strongly suggest Calibre. I use it on Windows. There are lots of add-ons for it, and one of the best apps ever for ebook users. It does everything. Edit books, file format conversion, library management, everything. And if it doesn't come with the app, it's an add-in. There's an Android app that talks to Calibre on a Windows machine. For audiobooks, the best app is Overdrive. their new app Libby, or their new app Libby. You need a valid library card from a library that supports OverDrive. Since Microsoft killed their DRM server, OverDrive now only supports simple MP3 audiobooks without the evil DRM, and that's the best kept secret. On the latest podcast, you spoke about kids learning to program. I agree totally. No matter what field of study someone studies, you can make yourself much more valuable if you can program a computer. I'm a Python hacker for many years, and my suggestion for younger kids is BBC Microbit. And he's got a link there to Adafruit.com. It's a very inexpensive $15 from Adafruit and other places. It's by far the easiest computer I've ever seen to start programming. It has switches and a tiny display, etc. It runs a cut-down version of Python called MicroPython. You can plug it into a Windows computer with a USB cable, install the IDE, and go. It also comes with a battery pack so the kid can disconnect from the PC. The IDE is basic but complete, and it has a flash button which sends your program to the micro bit and executes. It's limited in what it can do, but a kid can set this up themselves, type 2 lines of code, and see the results. Incredibly simple. I suggest you pick up one up for the kids. If you aren't familiar with it, forgive me if you've talked about it. I'm new. Also, I strongly suggest the Raspberry Pi. It has the best support of any computing device I've ever seen. I run mine headless with a larger flash drive or use it for all kinds of server and desktop apps. I'm terrified to download Windows apps anymore, save for things like converting file formats. All these utilities are available for some Raspberry Pi from their server, safe and free. I use mine on my Android device for things like DNS server, ad blocker, and sometimes when I need to do some sort of desktop computing function. It's designed for kids, but you don't have to be a so you don't have to be a computer expert to use these things. I agree with what was discussed about cell phones. My personal uses for cell phones are very modest: email, Twitter, SMS calls, and a ton of audiobooks and podcasts. I take a few pictures, and I'm not that picky about the camera. I was looking at buying a Moto G of some flavor for Black Friday, and was having trouble deciding which model was best for the money. Then Amazon had a sale on the Moto E Plus for $136. I had to try one for that price. I took it to Verizon store with my old phone. They gave me a SIM card to install. That was it. Minutes. I can listen to audio on my wireless earbuds all day, lots of email, Twitter, etc., and late night, and the battery is about 90%, and it shows 3 days left. I never use NFC, so I don't care that it doesn't support that. The screen is fine. The CPU is fine for what I do. Not fast, but doesn't lag. It's an incredible bargain. The whole phone is much more than my wife spent. The whole phone is not much more than what my wife spent for a glass screen protector for her Pixel 2. I picked up and installed my glass protector for $7.95, and that was trivial to install. Not for everyone, but a great bargain. Finally, have you ever discussed the little NFC buttons you can buy cheap? If your phone supports NFC, there are several apps that support NFC buttons, so you can wave your phone by a button and do things like turn things on or off, etc. Pretty easy to use these. Ooh, I need a break now. You guys talk.
Good job.
Yeah, Mark. I will say really quick, the NFC tags, the ones I have was suggested by a very, very good friend of the network, Chuck, and it's Dimple, D-I-M-P-L-E, very, very affordable. I want to say this was like the $14 model, maybe $17, where it has four buttons on it. The back is stickable adhesive, so you can stick it to a case or phone, and you can pull it off and put it back on more than a couple times, and it still works really good. I love the idea of those buttons. Kind of like I don't have any IoT around my house because I'm perfectly fine with walking over and flicking a switch. I haven't put that on my phone yet, and I cannot tell you why I haven't, except I just don't. I don't know.
I need those, actually. I just recently, I had my Christmas lights hooked up to smart plugs, and now Christmas is over. I had to figure out what to do with the smart plugs. So I hooked up my studio lights to them so I can say, hey, Amazon, turn on the studio lights. But the problem is the Echo is in the other room, so I have to do it before I come in. If I put one of those dots right there right when I walk in the door, I could swipe my phone across it, and the lights go on. I need that. That's a thing. This little room I'm in doesn't have any overhead lights. They're all plugged into an outlet.
I want to thank Randy for that email, man. He'll learn. He's only listened to a couple shows, so he'll learn that we do like the shorter emails. And we used to have people who would write longer ones. We ended up banning them, and they don't get to listen anymore. But we wouldn't.
As long as you start with Mark is right, you're okay.
Yeah.
Well, that helps. B, the long emails weren't just long, but they were nonsensical, and they typically started with "you're wrong." If you start an email like that, don't look forward to getting a great warm fuzzies back. Well, is what I'm saying.
I know people who've listened to 200 episodes and haven't written in an email, so I appreciate that, Randy, very much. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, And I'll say, Randy sounds much more knowledgeable than the average person. And yes, that was a direct suck up. Than the average person when it comes to mini computing. And what I will say to Randy is you might like the mini PC show on this network where we do focus heavily on Raspberry Pis, Odroid CU, chip EP266, and like the 8-bit. The beauty of the 8-bit and Python is, A, the 8-bit is technically supported and derived by, I believe, the BBC, which means it's funded and backed by the government, which means they can sell it for much less. Raspberry Pi is also a British thing. Raspberry Pi took it almost as a slap to them when that they came out with that micro bit, but it's really cool. And let me tell you, Python is by far the most simplistic, near human readable programming language I think I've ever seen in my life. I am a personal fan of it. I wish I could use it at my job, but they tend to believe PHP and Python are extremely vulnerable and should never be on anything. So I'm sad.
Okay, so the people, we've got it's called a tub chat, where it's just a bunch of people who sit in the bathtub and talk to us in the chat. They are inviting Randy to the tub. So if Randy wants to listen live and join all of our friends in the bathtub, they're welcome. He's welcome there, they said. So that's cool. I wanted to talk about, he talked about Libby by Overdrive. I put the link in the chat there. So I had the exodus of Amazon. So one of the things that I'm also going to miss is Audible. I did not, I don't subscribe to Audible at the $16 a month. I always buy I usually bought a Kindle book. I'd buy the physical book and then I'd get the Audible version. Now, usually if you buy an Audible book on its own, it's like $21 to $24 for some reason. You buy the physical book, I usually bought a used one, around $5 to $10. And then you buy the Kindle book, it's usually around $12. But if you buy the Kindle book for $12, a lot of times they'll throw in the audiobook for like another $7. So it ends up being cheaper than buying the audiobook by itself if you get the Kindle and the audiobook, which is nice if you want to go back and, you know, highlight parts and stuff in the Kindle part. So no, this Libby by Overdrive, and I've never went to my local library for an audiobook. I never thought about actually renting a book and not buying one. I don't know why I do that. I do like to own the physical books that I read just to have them. I don't know, just like little trophies that I actually used my brain once. But I will definitely check this out. And I just bought a book. So this came up. I'm like, I got to read this book. It's called Shoots Like a Girl. And I went to Audible, and this was after the Exodus, which, well, just another side tangent, Amazon charged me for Prime today, $99. yeah, how, that's some gall.
Told you.
So they did. Told you. Yeah, so they did. And I immediately turned around and asked for a refund. So I went to Audible, and it was $21. I'm just going to bring this app. I may be batting out of turn here. I might have to get 15 minutes in the penalty box. Or five for fighting anyway. This is Google Play Books has just added audiobooks. So and with their new big promotion of announcing this, I ended up getting the same audiobook that I could have got on Audible for $21. I ended up getting it for $7.99 off of Google Play because they have a little like $5 off promotion going on right now. So that was going to fix me for this time. But in my next book, I will check out this Libby by Overdrive. I just installed it and thank him for mentioning it.
Well, the Google Play Store now has audiobooks, right? I just read that this week, but I haven't actually been able to find how to get to the Google Play audiobooks.
You got
to
go through Play Books. That's how I bought the one I bought.
So you open the Books app and search for audiobooks in that, because I went to the Play Store and couldn't find it.
Yeah, no, you go through, it's in the Books. And the player for it is the Books. This is the media player.
I am a huge Audible fan, so it will be interesting for me to see how these two compare.
It's got a decent interface. It kind of looks like Books. I'll hit play on it, and it sounds just like Audible. It's got the 30 seconds forward, 30 seconds backwards. You can speed it up at different speeds and stuff like that. It can go up to, it looks like it only goes up to one, I don't know, two times, if you got a slow reader. So yeah.
Right. Well. Really quick, one, this is another reason Google Opinion Wards can be nice because you can get free money towards buying audiobooks if you want to leave Amazon or you just want to use their service instead. But really quick comment on Randy's email. First off, thank you for the email. The length of the email shows enough passion. You've put enough in that bank deposit of Podnuts credit. You have a lot of credit now for a long time, Randy. But two, I am now a little bit wary about suggesting phones with lower internal storage. And it's getting difficult for me to explain. I think, Mark, you will immediately catch on what I'm trying to say. I have two containers in front of me. One is a cup. One is a gallon. Okay. Think of these as micro SD cards. One is 3 gigs. One is 128 gigs. Okay. When you have a lower volume phone and you shove as many apps as you possibly can onto the micro SD card, micro SD cards are built for only so many read-write cycles. Now, even though both of the cards might have the same number of read-write cycles, because of the number of placeholders, the sizes of those cards, the bigger card should last you for the same amount of activity 10 times plus longer. Okay. I've had now 3 people in hindsight in the last couple months complain to me about their Samsung, and it's always in Samsung like S5 or S4, something clearly 2+ years older, which means they have 16 gigs of internal space and they're terrified to use it all up. So they buy higher end expensive SD cards and they push every single possible app they can onto it. And they've literally gone through like multiple SD cards in 1 year. Because how much they're burning through the SD card. And it's the kind of thing, yes, you can technically now buy a 512 gig micro SD card on sale in like a week. And you will have more read-write cycles. So technically speaking, a larger SD card now than versus a smaller one, even though it's the same quality and same number of write cycles, it still should last longer. Am I wrong?
Well, there's one place I will correct you. SD, any solid state media like that, infinite reads. Reads are non-destructive. Writing is destructive.
Right.
So as long as you're not caching data, as long as you're not using your flash for caching data, which that's all done on the internal phone. So the storage device that you put in should only be reading and writing when you're writing to it. So I
should.
So, I mean, if the Android OS is behaving per spec, now there are times when you can move things off to the SD cards. If you use, I'm not even going to say rooted apps. If you use non-standard apps, you can do that. So technically you're right. There's more overhead for failure in a larger device. If you're buying an SD card at Walmart off the rack, I agree with you, buy the big one. But I don't believe it's worthwhile in most cases to pay the exorbitant fees to go from, say, 64 gigs to 128 gigs of internal storage on a phone. I think you get the lower storage on the phone and supplement that with external cards.
Right. And that was a thing. One of the guys in the Mattermost server, one of the cards was 128 gig. And in hindsight, it's the kind of thing, if he would have saved all of his money from his last 3 micro SD cards, he could have got an okay phone. And its replacement. I think, unfortunately, the freedom in the Android ecosystem is if an app developer is incompetent on how they treat some of the partitions, some of their storage paths on their application, I do think there are apps out there that are using app folders, data folders, like a short-term cache storage just because of the speed enhancement that you see. I'm sure there's not a lot, but I'm sure if you have a lot of apps on your phone, a couple are doing it.
I think older Samsung phones, I used to be a Samsung guy, if you remember. I don't have any SD card slot in the phone I own now, or have I in the last couple phones, but I really think like the file managers or something in those Samsung phones are probably corrupting those SD cards too. Because I remember that same scenario where I've had wasted a few SD cards, and I really think it, in some cases it's just some sort of a thing doing it.
Well, here's the kicker, and I did go back and check with somebody else. The last 2 people who told me about Samsung phones killing SD cards, you take the SD card out of the phone, you stick it in a Linux computer, you can read the complete thing and pull all the files you want off. You just cannot write to it. So when you put in the Android device, the first thing it tries to do is write to it. So it tells you that it's a failure. So while it looks like it's killing micro SD cards, put it in a different machine and take a look at it. And if you can read all the data, you know it's not dead. It's just reached its maximum number of writes.
And that's I think I've also used bad trimming.
I think I've also used some of these in the, you know, afterwards in a Raspberry Pi, and they worked. You know, I don't think it killed them. I think it's just crap.
Well, the phone reached a certain point where it no longer had faith in the device.
Yeah.
Just to go down this road a little bit, because I think it's interesting. And on my other show, Geek Grant, we did a whole bit on storage, and I struggled. I thought for a long time to come up with the best analogy that a non-designer could understand on why solid-state media is a destructive read. So I came up with this analogy. Think of it like we've all played with balloons, right? You blow up a balloon, you let the air out, it flies across the room, you blow it up again. Every time you do that, the balloon is a little less tense, a little less firm than it was. So eventually you blow it up, and as you stretch it, it gets thinner and thinner. It gets easier to blow up, and it's not holding. So the way those things work is you store a charge inside a cell. And the way you store that charge is by shoving a charge through a semiconductor. So essentially you're forcing air into that balloon. So think of that little cell as as rubber, and you're shoving electricity into it instead of air. All right. And every time you do that, it stretches that membrane a little bit. It stresses it. So the way they work is charge is a one, no charge is a zero, right? So that's the simplest way to do it. But in order to maximize storage capacity out of cheap equipment, the most multi-level storage devices, they call that because they store multiple charges. They'll store a five, a three, and a one, or a zero. So you've quadrupled your amount of storage in that same cell. So 5 volts, 3 volts, 1 volt, 0 volts. The trouble is, as you start to stress that membrane, blow up that balloon over and over, the amount of tension in the rubber between a 5 and a 3 gets pretty hard to read. You can't tell the difference. It's stressed out. It can't tell. You can't tell whether it's a 5 or a 3. And then as it stretches more, eventually it just pops, and it'll no longer hard to hold a charge. So whether it was a 5, a 3, or a 1, it's now a 0 and will always ever be a 0. So that's why writing to SSDs, particularly multi-level SSDs, is a destructive act. And in order to cram as much storage space into the cheap media as possible, they're playing tricks with it. And those tricks get harder to determine, and the machine is doing harder work every time it has to do it. So eventually it gets to a point where it's like, I can't tell what the voltage in that cell is, so I'm going to mark it as bad. That's why your phone will stop trying, whereas a Raspberry Pi or something else might be willing to give it another shot.
Right. And one of the beauties of SSDs of all kinds is on the old spinning disk, everything had to be in a certain spot, fragmentation kind of thing. On SSDs, if you read and write the same file 5 times back to back to back to back, in your operating system, it's going to look like it's in the exact same spot every time. But on the firmware on the SSD, it does what's called wear leveling, and every time puts it someplace else. So it tries to even the wearing out across the whole disk, which is why typically they don't gingerly fail. SSDs have catastrophic, it's working fine, and then boom, doesn't work at all. And the multi-level thing is the key, because internal hard drives on phones are of a much higher quality of chip versus micro SD cards. So you can get many, many more read-write cycles of confidence on the internal, which is why even now I'm more than ever saying to myself, I will not get smaller than a 64 gig internal storage on my phone ever again, because I want to wear out the more expensive stuff than cheap micro SD cards with having moderate failures every now and then. And I've been seriously, people. Today, I listened to 22 hours worth of podcast. Yesterday, 18 hours of podcast. The day before, 26-hour podcast. The day before that, 27 hours of podcast. So there's a lot of writing and deleting on my phone. I've had this phone now over a year and 2 months, and I still to this day cannot sense a sliver of slowdown on this device, and there is no SD card in it. I understand people wanting SD cards. I understand people wanting headphone jacks. You can want them. I am not a stickler on SD cards anymore.
Yeah, and the manufacturers, the good manufacturers, the people who charge a lot for their product, they understand that. And so your 64 gig card will have 180 gigs of storage on it. And the rest of them are just swaps, spares to swap out. The cheap ones, the guy that you got, the little card that you picked up in the checkout line at Walmart, if it says 64 gigs, it's got 60 gigs of stuff on it. It's not actually 64, and there's zero, well, that's probably an exaggeration, but there's very little room for error. So it just all depends on where you put your money, frankly. If you want your dependence, like in the rig that I'm talking to you on right now, it's a Windows device with a solid state drive inside. I did a single level solid state device at 160 gigabytes, which is relatively small, but it's single level, so it's just charge or no charge. It's not trying to do the multi-level thing. So that will get me more. And it's a relatively small device, but the internals probably have about double that redundancy. Manufacturers don't like to tell you that, but sometimes you can dig up the specs and find that. In this case, I just had to make my best guess.
Good move.
So there you go. That wasn't about Android apps, but I thought it was an interesting divergence.
Well, hopefully that's one of the things we'll see in the next year that are an improvement on the average phone is eMMC or internal disk quality.
All right, let's do a couple of more apps. Eric, you, sir.
I've got an app that I think this must have been a big hit over on the iOS side and a big deal, but it has recently come to Android and it's called HQ Trivia Unreleased by Intermedia Labs. So at least once a day, sometimes, I don't know exactly their schedule, but this is a live trivia contest that everybody who has this app installed on their phone can join into. And they ask like 10 or a dozen different questions. And as soon as you get one wrong, you fall off. So I played it 2 weeks ago at 8 o'clock at night. And like right now, as of this recording, the next show is at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So I think it may be 2 and 8 every day, which on the East Coast would be 1 and 7 every day. Every day at 9 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. and 3 p.m. Eastern. Okay. So basically, we started out with 300,000 people playing, and as the questions came up, it's like a live guy. It was actually Jimmy Kimmel who was reading the questions the night I played, and he's watching the people fall off and, you know, and kind of interacting. There's a chat room going on the whole time, and it's kind of fun, really. And it's kind of a lot of anticipation of a game starting, and then as people start falling off and the host starts making some jokes, it's a good time, and it doesn't take forever. I lost after the third question. I got the first two right and then got the third one wrong.
I've heard about this. Hey, apparently it's very popular.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Eric, you know how you felt when you saw the new BB Tan game?
Yeah.
I don't feel anything like that. I despise these kinds of games for one reason alone. Ain't no way in any universe am I winning anything on this damn app. Because they ain't asking no questions about Linux, no questions about malware, no questions about network security, no questions about Linux, no questions about podcasting, none of that. So this is never getting installed on my device. But there is another McLaughlin who I don't trust because she's a McLaughlin, who I will make sure knows about this app, and that is my sister. My sister was on Jeopardy. My sister on a phone thing back in 2012. Won enough money to pay for her place in New York for a year, to have all the rent paid for a whole year, bought her husband a car, paid for a trip to Egypt, and she just lent my dad a little bit of money because she still has more money left over. She is the trivia person where I will show this to her and hopefully she'll buy me something nice when she wins money because I ain't winning nothing. And I'm the anti, I mean, if it's ever on the front of like any popular website, like TMZ, or if it's ever on like the Colbert Show or Jimmy Kimmel Show or something, I want nothing to do with it. If you haven't picked it up by now, people, like Flappy Bird, like Angry Birds, like this, it's not my cup of tea is the way I put it. It's cool. For somebody else.
So do you guys want to know the question I went out on? I still remember it. It's a part of my sad history now.
Who created Linux?
No, Damn. No, that would have been. Damn. I might have got that one right. There was three. It's a multiple choice question, so it's three answers. And the question was, which one of these animals is not a real animal?
Okay.
We had the whalefin, the jackalope, and the liger.
Jackalope.
Liger's real. Jackalope, I'm tempted to say it's fake, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. The jackalope is not a real animal.
Well, because I love the idea of a liger or a taijin. That's the only reason why I know they exist. Male lion, male, okay, one lion, one tiger, male, female, switch them, and with one set you have a taijin, the other one you have a liger. One of them is small, very small, with stripes, and the other one is literally gigantic, like 350 plus pounds, but neither of them can breed. It's kind of like a donkey. You know what I mean? How horses and donkeys? Yeah, horses and donkeys. Or horses and mules. Mules. Thank you very much. So they're technically animals, but they cannot procreate.
Well, see, you would have went to the next level.
No, I'm not good under pressure. I would have guessed wrong.
All right, Dor, your app, and then we'll read the last email, and then we'll put this epic show to bed.
Okay. Oh, man. I'm really sorry for bringing this subject up now for all this stuff, guys. Okay. Net neutrality. I'm just going to put it like this. There is no right answer, okay? There is no right answer about this. Stop screaming. Stop trolling. Stop memeing. Stop shouting. Stop tweeting and Facebooking how stupid everybody else is, because this is how it... No, there is no right answer. The people who are expressly to free open internet, free open internet, I then sit with them at work, for instance, and I say to them, that's great. Now, what if your mom is having surgery and the doctor needs to live communicate with three other doctors around the world? And what happens if their packets slow down? How do you feel about open internet now? Well, you know, and they all shut up.
I've got an answer for that. But
there is no right answer.
Well, the answer is, you know how much you pay for that surgery? They can buy a good pipe to get to where they need to go.
Easier said than done. But what if the... three rooms down, they're all streaming Netflix or High IQ or whatever the hell it's called. Okay? No, that's not how the internet works. Free and open internet means there is no priority. Okay? And right. Trust me, I'm more in the favor of that than a strict regulation everywhere. But I will say there is no right answer. Stop saying the right, because you know what the right answer is? Every time the government does anything, it makes it worse. Okay, that's all I got to say. Okay, now this app will help you identify if you're on a network that is following net neutrality type behavior, where they're trying to slow down or speed up or prioritize different types of packets. This is an app by the Tor Project. And if anyone knows me, I don't trust the Tor Project. It was created by the Navy. The United States Navy created Tor. So I don't trust it. It's a government project. But this is called Oni Probe, O-O-N-I-P-R-O-B-E. It's been completely audited. All the code's been audited, which is why I trust it. You basically launch this app when you're on a Wi-Fi access point. You click the button, and it basically does a stringent set of tasks, and it tries to determine, are you on a network that is doing things with your packets to manipulate speeds and the so forth. So if you are the type of person who is terrified that your packets are getting apprehended and molested and accosted and inspected and everything else along your travels, you need this app. You need to check it out. I installed on my phone and I tested on different networks I connect to. Oh, wait, that's right. I connect to my network and nobody else's, just to see what kind of results I get. I'm just interested. So I like this app for that reason. But please, we have to, in this country, stop screaming and arguing about everybody being wrong and how we are right. And we need to talk to people about why they came to their solutions, and then you can explain to them why you came to your solutions, and at worst case scenario, agree to disagree, but stop telling them they're wrong.
Oh, please think of the packets.
As a grizzled old network engineer, I get a little huffy about net neutrality discussions. Yes, I believe net neutrality is a positive thing, but I know for sure that bandwidth management is a necessary thing. Package management must happen. And if you conflate the two, if packet management becomes a non-neutral internet, then you're a moron and you don't understand technology. And right. That's what it looks like this Oni Probe would do. I'm just looking at the screenshots, just reading the description. It looks like anytime there's packet shaping, it's going to scream censorship.
Well, okay. And to the people who are firm believers in the open internet, it could be called censorship as far as their belief is sent. But I'm the same way, Mark, because here's the thing. I tell the two of the people who were telling me how you have to have a free and open internet, blah, 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 then openly admitted to me that they QoS their kids at their house. I'm like, you're a damn hypocrite. Mm-hmm. You are the worst kind of human being that's in this country right now because you QoS your kids. You slow your kids down. Your kids are now less than the average person in the United States. I'm ashamed of you. And I said, I hope your kids turn out horrible because you're making them horrible by slowing down their internet. You know, because that's the way most people are. Oh, you know, in my house, I want to control the packets. But when I'm on, I need to have the exact same access as everybody else.
I will say Google Whopper neutrality. Really good video, yeah. Burger King. It's a Burger King commercial, but it's a really good video that explains what the world could look like if a non-neutral net goes crazy. But I will remind you that net neutrality wasn't a thing in 2008, right? So the world didn't immediately get better. Well, when net neutrality became the law of the land. And it's not going to immediately get worse now that it's not.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Mark. It wasn't a real thing in 2008, 2007, 2006, 2005, 2004, right. 2003, all the way back
right.
to 1980, whatever. Or no, I'm sorry, 99 was when the dot-com thing got lifted. And it did change a little bit. But and that's one thing I said to people. I said, how bad was it before, really? I mean, really, really, how bad was it before? I mean, you got to understand, we have tremendous rights and privileges in this country. If your Netflix buffers, is it really like, you know, that severe?
Or you'll be happy and calmed to hear that Dick Durbin sent me an email today concerning this very topic, along with my other Senator Tammy Duckworth. Both in the same day, they're very concerned about this along with you. So it'll be fixed very soon, it sounds like.
Anytime a look.
I'm here from the government, and I'm here to help.
Yep.
A politician getting involved is like a sanitation truck pulling up in front of a bakery. Nothing good can come out of that.
Nice.
Okay, that's just the truth. Politicians corrupt everything. That's what they're born and bred to do. It's in their DNA.
Yep, that's why I said they'll have a fix for us very soon.
Oh, Mark. I'm sure.
I believe it was Mark Twain who once said, any man who wants to be president should be immediately disqualified for the job. If you want the job, it shouldn't be yours.
He says,
all right, one last email from our friend Michael. It says, good morning, gentlemen. I hope all is well. I have an Android device question for you all. As all three of you are value conscious, I think he just called me cheap, and I'm okay with it. I value and appreciate your recommendations when it comes to Android devices. So, here's the situation. Point the first. I currently have a Samsung Note 3, 32 gig. It's an AT&T model being used on T-Mobile. Great device, but it's laggy and often slow. I'm okay with it, but sometimes it does bother me. I've had this phone since August 2014. Point the second. I would like the Samsung S8 Active on T-Mobile, but don't want to pay the $130 down payment, but somewhat okay with a $30 per month for 24 months. Point the third. However, I can get a new Samsung S7 32 gig on T-Mobile for zero down payment and $20 a month for 24 months. The one thing I'm not exactly happy with is the smaller screen. So the question is this, Samsung, is the Samsung S7 still worth buying at this time? Thanks, Mike.
I would say for Mike, if he's used to a Note, he's still not going to like the smaller screen. So I think he answered his own question there. He needs to go with something with a screen size. If he's used to the Note 3 and he's okay with that, stick with that screen size. That's my opinion for that.
My opinion is, Mike, don't buy a Samsung device. You're going to be sorry. That's just me.
Right.
Okay. But I'll say this. The only difference, the biggest difference is going from a Note 3 to anything 7, 8 or up, whatever. You know what I mean? The screen to body ratio is going to be an extreme difference. So while that S7 might be technically a smaller screen because the screen to phone ratio is so much bigger, it's not going to feel as small. I guarantee you that. Yes, it's going to be smaller. Also, the pixel density is going to be much better and the resolution is going to be better. So I would actually encourage you to go into the store and hold the S7 for a couple minutes if you can, at least 3 minutes, and play with it. And then see how you really feel, because you might not notice it as much as you think you might notice it. Perception is reality, Mike. That's all that matters. Two, the S8 active phones, quote unquote, are fine. They really are fine. Here's the kicker. If you get an active phone, the first thing you really should do is cancel your insurance. This phone can handle like 3 foot drops. It can handle 3 feet of water, and it can handle like no dust ever getting in it whatsoever. So nothing in this phone should ever break. That should save you like 30, no, like $7 to $13 a month. Something like that. $130 down, you're not okay with. $30 a month, you're okay with. Here's the thing. Put the $30 in your pocket. Next month, put another $30 in your pocket. Next month, put $30 more in your pocket. And then decide to go to the store and pay the $130 up front, because you've already saved the $30 each month for 3 months. Do not pay that $30 a month. That is too much money. That is too much money.
So, all right. You ask one question in this email. I will answer the one question that you ask. Is the Samsung S7 still worth buying at this time? Yes.
It's fine.
It's as worth buying this month as it was last month. It's as worth buying now as it was the day it came out. It's the same device. The device didn't change just because a new device came out. Is the S7 worth buying at this time? Yes. Now, the question you didn't ask. Do not buy your phone from phone carriers ever.
Thank you.
You're talking about, add it up, dude. Do the math. You're looking at paying $850 for the Samsung S8 if you follow that plan.
Yeah.
Now that's market price, right? The phone runs $750 to $800, so you're not overpaying too much for it. But don't do it. You are locked in to a payment plan. You don't know what's going to happen 24 months from now. You don't know what's going to happen 24 hours from now. Don't make that kind of commitment. That's ridiculous. Say no. It's a stupid idea. I'm not saying you're stupid, Michael. I'm saying buying phones from carriers is a stupid thing to do.
Swappa.com.
Swappa.com, T-Mobile, Samsung Galaxy S7, let me see, 32 gigabytes, $190.
Wow.
Period. And now here's the other thing. The S7 from anywhere is going to be an S7. You get no bonuses buying it from T-Mobile unless you call bloatware on the phone a bonus. So I'm with Mark when I say I will never in my life walk into a store in America, and buy a phone ever again because of the contentment I get from the other side of the counter, from waiting 2 hours in the store typically, and then from getting the extra bloatware that's on top of it. And then I'm locked into it. I will always buy my devices from Swappa or GearBest or something else, because the prices they charge in US stores, every time you go into a store and buy anything, and here's the honest God truth, here's why Amazon's winning. You walk into a store, Verizon, T-Mobile, AT&T, whatever. You walk into a store, you got to remember, every penny you spend has to go towards lights, ground rent, maintenance, employees, insurance, and everything else. So the company has to charge you to cover all of that before that company even gets a dime, even gets a fraction of a penny back. So they have to charge you too much. That's just the honest truth. They have to charge you too much. And they're not going to look at you and say, hey, Mike, we're going to cut you a deal. No. And if they tell you they're cutting you a deal, they're lying through their teeth. They can't cut you a deal. They have to do what's right by the shareholders, which is charge you everything they can possibly charge you.
So that T-Mobile store, if he pays over the time, is $480 if he doesn't get any insurance on it, which he's locked in for a contract. So if he breaks it, he can't just go buy another one as easily without still having to pay that $20 a month. So would you say $190 on Swappa, never pay insurance on it?
Well, you can. You can then go to squaretrade.com, opt into it, and pay $6 a
month.
But
he's looking at
you get the exact same insurance.
$50 more than the down payment on an S8, and he owns a phone that he doesn't have to have insurance if he doesn't want to, and he never has to make a payment on. That's our
I'm just the American mentality, and it's not just American, but I'm an American, it's like you can yell at your own family, right? The American mentality of I can afford the payment has got to go. If you can't afford the device, you can't afford the device. Paying it out over 24 months doesn't mean you can afford the device. That's not a thing. If you can't afford $800 for an S8 Active, you can't afford an S8 Active. Just accept that reality. Stop paying your future away for something you can't afford. If you need a payment plan, you can't afford it.
Right. And if you need something right now, buy like the Moto E or the Moto G for now, and then save your money and then buy a device. Buy a better device if you want. But yeah, my wife, I love her, dear. I love her so much, but she will never listen to anything I say. She's paying, I think it's $12 or $14 a month for a Samsung J7. which the J stands for jank. And this phone is horrible. It's horrible. And I showed her how much she was going to end up paying for it. And then I showed her phones on swap and she said, it's just easier. It's all wrapped up in one bill. And she's not wrong. And I can't tell her she's wrong because I love her dearly. But, and then she said, why don't you pick out a phone here? I said, over my dead body. And then I stopped and thought, I sound like my dad.
I'm so happy to have all my family on Project Fi now. Our bill is $89 a month for four phones, and we don't have any of those unusual, unnecessary charges or contracts.
Yeah, that's why I like the mobile. No contract. And my wife was giving away my Netflix username and password to too many people, is the way I put it. Too many damn people. Mm-hmm. Well, with T-Mobile, the plan we have now, we get a free Netflix account. Fine. I said, if you cancel my account, I will slit your neck. Okay? You get that free T-Mobile account, you give that account to your father, to your brother, to anybody. I don't care. But stop giving my account away. Because every time I open my account up, it's poisoned by
my little pony.
They're suggesting.
Horrible. Yes, because like my youngest son will not stop watching the cartoon series Home, based off the bad movie with the bad Sheldon guy in it. And then the father-in-law, I love him. I respect the man. He was in the military for 30 years, glorified, worked for blood, sweat, and tears for this country. But his taste of softcore porn I just can't stand it anymore. So I don't want them on my account anymore. I'm sick and tired. When I want to go in and watch Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling or something, I don't want to see.
Speaking of softcore porn.
Yeah, I know. I'm a hypocrite. Mark, I'm an American. That's what I'm supposed to do. There are certain perks. And here's the thing. Without net neutrality, okay, because of what T-Mobile did, technically against the open internet, where it gives us YouTube bits for free. I kind of like that. Now, if I wasn't getting that, I would say that's wrong of them to do, man. They shouldn't do that kind of thing. That's just insulting. But because I get it, I'm like, it's pretty good to me. Yep, go ahead and watch YouTube, kids. Love it.
Never mistake a generosity for some for an entitlement to all.
Mm-hmm. I'm guilty.
We're running long. I was going to bring up Project Fi's new plan, too.
Oh, what a ripoff. Oh, sorry.
We'll talk about it next week.
I would be all in on Project Fi if I didn't have to buy the super expensive devices to get it.
The mobile 4X, Moto 4X, that's not too expensive. $400.
Or good.
Or, well, yeah, true.
All right. So let's wrap up this mini-series event. what's your name? The guy I'm looking at. Eric. Yeah, that's it. You got any final words of wisdom for us tonight?
If you guys are in Orlando or around the Orlando area coming up in February, come to PodFest 2018 and we'll see you there. I want to thank our listeners for listening and supporting the show and telling their friends about it. It's growing. It's a good thing. And thank you for your Patreon subscriptions and things like that, so we don't have to advertise for toothbrushes on our show about tech.
Or mortgages. That's a big thing these days. Tech shows talking about mortgages.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. All right, Dorf, what about you? What are your final words of wisdom?
And tax software. And that's what I was going to say. If you notice something, Mark, I noticed something. We didn't stop every 20 minutes and talk about something that we genuinely don't care anything about for like 3 to 5 minutes sometimes do. Which would have equated to 5 ad breaks in this show. 5 stinking ad breaks, which would have equated to almost 10 minutes at least of content of taking up your listeners' valuable time, selling you off as a product, like a slave. That's what it's like, treating listeners like slaves for a promotional process. And we at Podnuts here try to never do that. Certain companies we actually support and we want to promote ads for. They don't sell mortgages. They don't sell mattresses. They don't sell cars. None of those companies are on Podnuts. And I hope with anything in my power, we'll never be on Podnuts. So if you want to make sure Podnuts keeps growing, if you want to make sure Podnuts keeps doing this type of content, if you want to make sure we do not have to rely on underhanded tactics about lying about our statistics like everybody else in the universe does to try to get more ad sponsors to pay more money per each listener, then you only have one real choice, and that is to support those who support you. You can go and you can donate us money via PayPal, or you can go to patreon.com/AndroidAppAddicts and support this show directly. And if you don't have the money, don't sweat it. Send us an email. That's support.
And yeah, the tub says AAA brought to you by Monster Energy Drink. I would do a Monster spot.
I love Monsters. I'm going to tell you now.
Me too.
If there is an app on my phone that I could install that would spy on me, but every day I would earn a Monster, shoot, brother, I'd have two phones.
As long as it's a white Monster, sugar-free, I'm down.
Well, no. It could be white. It could be Ultra Sunrise. That one's good too, I think.
Those are all disgusting, in my opinion. Oh. So I could not support a Monster Energy Drink ad. But
more
GoDaddy,
Monsters for me.
I have a GoDaddy subscription problem. So I would have no problem hawking their services, because I give roughly a quarter of my paycheck every month to GoDaddy for the dozens of domains I own. I have a domain issue. I need an intervention. but anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us. Chat room, you were awesome tonight. You can go to podnuts.com/live. I believe that's the right URL. Any Tuesday night, sometime around 9 p.m. Eastern time. And Thursday night, sometime around, actually probably Tuesday nights too, around 9 p.m. Eastern time, and join the chat room, join the tub, as it's suddenly been called. So we welcome you to do that. And Eric, you had something else you wanted to say.
One more thing. What was our episode number? 494?
Something? 6.
496. So six episodes, four episodes away now from 500. And I just wanted to make a mention real quick. If you install the Watchmaker Watch app, one of our listeners, Mark Seralt, has made the official Android App Addicts episode number 500 watch face in anticipation of that episode. I forgot to mention it earlier.
Thank you, Mark. And Mark.
And Mark.
And Eric.
And Dor.
And Tub. And the Tub people, the Tubians.
We'll have to find a good name for the Nuts Tub or something. That's not the good name, but something about it.
All right. Well, I think the only thing I can do at this point, for the good of the country, for the good of the world at large, is end this show. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week, because that's it for this episode of Android App Addicts.
This is Martin from Podnuts Pro. Thank you so much for choosing this podcast to be in your ears right now. Don't forget to support all the other Podnuts shows on the Podnuts Network. And we cannot do this without you. So please, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, email us at podnutspro@podnuts.com.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.